What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, research shows that Africa is experiencing a youth bulge. The continent has over 200 million young people aged between 15 and 24. This makes Africa the youngest continent in population terms. If this trend continues, these figures will double by 2045. That is 400 million young people on the continent. But this growth can be both an opportunity and a liability to the continent, and for that matter, to the world. Young people are often the biggest drivers of economic growth in any one society. So having a young population is good for economic development. But there's also a potential problem when large numbers of young people are without jobs. Figures show that in sub-Saharan Africa, 51% of young women are unemployed, and 43% of young men are also unemployed. Now, experts attribute part of the reason for high numbers of youth unemployment on the continent to few jobs available. Simply, the job market has not expanded enough to make room for this youth bulge. The demographic dividend. Other figures show that in the past decade, most of all the jobs created on the continent, which were around 80 million according to some statistics, of those, only 10 million were created for young people. So the current pace of job creation in Africa is not able to meet the demands of the segment of its population that is the fastest growing. But this can be resolved in the long run if there's an environment that encourages young people to be less of job seekers and more of job creators. And how do we do that? Skills of entrepreneurship should be entrenched in our school curriculum from elementary to university level. Financial institutions should also be more open to backing young entrepreneurs with great ideas. And government also need to get young people on board with whatever new initiatives that are designed to drive their economies. Basically, there needs to be an ecosystem that merges education, finance, and spaces for innovation to push more young people into their next role as entrepreneurs. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Yeah, I think many young African women and men, they are setting up their own businesses. Maybe to set up more funds, like public development funds, where youths can get loans to start various businesses, and maybe for banks as well to open up, maybe to reduce their rates so that maybe many youths become interested to obtain loans to enter into businesses. And
I think young Africans shy away from being entrepreneurs because of lack of knowledge. Yeah, most of them are not well trained, and most of them lack that advice, lack that expertise to run business. So they end up not be willing to involve themselves in business activities. I think government has a huge responsibility of making sure that its people standing on their own terms of business, and that can be achieved by maybe setting up deliberate policies of encouraging people to do business on their own.
In case you've just joined us, welcome to it and thank you for being with us today. This is Upfront. I'm Nadia Sami, coming to you from South Africa, and Jackson Vunganyi is doing his thing in Washington, D.C. This is the part of the show where you get to express your opinion. Here's what you had to say.
Entrepreneurship is a little harder because it's a business that either you can start it with a capital or you can get assistance from the government. And you are not literally just shying off, but they have the difficulties of thinking of how to start.
My name is Anthony Moga in Juba, South Sudan. When I look at the situation of youths getting away from businesses or they feel shy, in South Sudan what I look at, many youths are not informed. They really don't have much idea on what they can do.
Why African youth shy away somehow? It is the discouragement of the whole business. You find that if you don't have a capital, how do you run the business?
For me, there are no statistics that tells me that young people don't want to do business. Challenges, maybe because there's no capital, how to start the business. If you can see in the street of Juba, you have this black market, young people, it's all young people.
Experts agree that entrepreneurship is an important driver of growing economies. Small businesses, often started by young people, are a source of employment for the millions of young graduates or for those that are not able to complete their education. This translates into income and ultimately wealth creation. In Africa, there are many opportunities to become an entrepreneur, and they can start by recognizing an existing problem faced by the community. And that is how Abu Musuza, a young Ugandan entrepreneur, entered the energy sector. He co-founded Village Energy, a company that provides after-sale services to solar system consumers around the country. His company now hires over 100 technicians, all working to provide Uganda with clean energy. I caught up with Musuza in Kampala.
I founded Village Energy pretty much from my own background. I was fortunate enough to be born in urban areas, but also had the chance to live between both urban and rural areas and experience firsthand the energy poverty that is in rural areas.
Before you started, did you have a background in energy production?
I actually did not. It's pretty much the experience I gained in the space of social entrepreneurship and learning from other social entrepreneurs, Ashoka Salo, who are working in the space of energy.
As a young entrepreneur, what are some of the challenges that you faced and had to overcome?
Well, of course, first and foremost is, you know, the financial challenge that, you know, everyone goes through. But certainly coming into a space where we did not have, you know, that much experience, it was learning on the job, so that made things a bit more difficult to get off the ground. However, we did manage to navigate those. But some of the other issues were around the whole fact that there's a lack of trust for solar solutions, particularly in rural areas where most of kerosene is burnt. So this stems from people who earlier supplied very bad quality products that broke. And so it becomes a lot more difficult to sell them a new product.
Let me ask you about youth employment in Africa, but also in Uganda specifically, the high levels of youth unemployment. Do you really see government as a role player? Should young people take more initiative like yourself and stop waiting for government to come in and help out?
I think the creativity, the initiative, I think is an abundance of that in Uganda. And yes, while there may be, you know, a significant population of young people who, you know, may have lost, you know, hope, lost faith, but there is a huge, huge community of creatives in Uganda. And I think government's role right now, I think, would be to pick up those young creatives and provide them the platform, the infrastructure to make sure that they thrive. And if those thrive, then they set an example for the millions of other young people who have lost hope, you know, because they see a lot of other young people who are trying to work on something and not getting that support that you know, that is needed for them to become successful. We get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, stories of young people who have made it despite the odds. But, you know, that should not be the exception. That should be the rule, that as a young person, when you engage in entrepreneurship, you need to be able to, you know, access the infrastructure you need to be able to succeed. And if every young person knows that those opportunities exist, then every young person will see the need to take initiative on their own, because, you know, they know they stand a high chance of succeeding.
As I walk to the valley of death, I will fear no evil. Yeah, with the money is on our radio.
Okay. I was Abu Musuza, a young Ugandan entrepreneur. He co-founded Village Energy, a company that provides after-sales services to solar system consumers around the country. Let's listen to your opinions right now.
I understand that they do so because they are lacking incentives and role models.
I have a different view on that one. It's not that they shy away from being entrepreneurs, but they don't have the right prerequisite to entrepreneurship skills. I will give you an example. It's just recently that most of the schools in Africa have introduced entrepreneurship education in their syllabuses just now. So it's about that they don't know what entrepreneurship is about. I think the government should still incorporate entrepreneurship subjects starting at the lower level, from the senior primary schools up to secondary schools, and then they should try to put it as a priority in the college, so that whoever comes out from the university should have learned the entrepreneurship, so that he should be able to find the right fit himself or herself.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi, and Nadia Sami is in Johannesburg, South Africa. I'm in our Washington, D.C. studios. We are talking about youth entrepreneurship, a topic that we love to tackle right here on the show. Now, as the continent evolves and young people respond to 21st century challenges, new opportunities arise. And Simon Stumpf has been researching new pathways to entrepreneurship in Africa. He says that there are new emerging jobs on the continent that will be needed to reverse the high rates of youth unemployment.
So if you look at any of the top jobs in any country, top meaning the most sought after, the most desirable, the best paying, you're typically going to see that whether it's web designer, app developer, or organic farmer, transporter, these are new jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago. So if you look into the future, we can say the same thing. We can say that the jobs that will be on that top 10 list 10 years from now, 20 years from now, do not exist yet. So our job, if we want to help young people be ready for the future, is to help predict what those best jobs are going to be, or more importantly, what skills they're going to need to fill those or any jobs in the emerging future.
And what about the old jobs?
So old jobs are there. But if I'm saying like the top ones, the growth industries, the areas where people are going to be, where employers are going to be most hungry for new talent, these are the jobs that we would set our sights on.
And what is this prediction based upon?
So Ashoka, for 30 years, has really been a partner and an ally and learned from entrepreneurs. We believe entrepreneurs don't work just in the private sector. Entrepreneurs, thankfully, tackle every challenge. And social entrepreneurs are people who are looking at new healthcare systems, new education systems, new ways of farming, new ways of thinking about talent. So our predictions are based on sitting with entrepreneurs, betting on them, and saying, we believe you're going to be successful, and then stepping into that adjacent possible, saying, if this person is successful, the entire solar energy industry in Uganda will be transformed. If this person is successful, veterinary clinics in Kenya will not look the way they do today. They will look like, you know, this model that this entrepreneur is championing. And so what we're able to do is stitch together a new vision, a futuristic vision, based on our bet and our belief that these creative entrepreneurs will succeed in transforming the field that they've dedicated their lives to reimagining and revisioning.
Are these jobs reflective of how many of these African societies are evolving in the 21st century?
Absolutely. And actually, here again, I think entrepreneurs are our best partners in seeing where a society is going, seeing where a society is trending. These are people, again, they're from these places. They have a deep and a nuanced understanding of the challenges and the opportunities. And they bet their careers, they bet their lives, they get family and friends to invest in them, and they bet on these visions for the future. So if you believe in entrepreneurs and their ability to reimagine systems, to see solutions where other people see problems, they're the best investment, but they're also the best way in which we can see, you know, where our societies, where our countries are going.
And what does it take, or what will it take for these for young people who want to enter this new or future job market?
So about a year ago, I wrote a blog post where I shared, you know, 10 of the jobs or 9, something, you know, a few jobs that I thought were most exciting. And somebody rightly said, you know what, these are going to employ tens of thousands of people, maybe 100,000. And so it's not, you know, this is not a one-size-fits-all prescription. I can't say you should all be trained as doctors because that's the biggest growth industry, right?
Mm.
Well, so the way a young person should hear this, and the way a young person might, you know, think about being ready for her future is to say, well, what are the skills that are common across these most, you know, emerging, desirable, important jobs? And that's where we've also spent some time looking. And there are some clear patterns. And they link with another trend that we can see across these entrepreneurs, which is that the world is becoming less about one big person and many small people, you know, one person setting the rules and getting everybody to follow. But it's much more about everybody a problem solver, everybody a big person, and working in teams to create solutions.
Yeah, yeah.
Experts agree that entrepreneurship education is a lifelong learning process. It starts as early as elementary school through all levels of education, including adult education. That says something about the need for education reform across the continent. It's a subject that we will have to tackle too right here on Upfront. Basically, there's a need to create a system of education that incorporates the values of entrepreneurship on every step of our education. But do you necessarily have to go to school to be an entrepreneur to actually start a business, to be an entrepreneur? And to answer that question, I reached Rahama Wright. She's a young business owner, originally from Ghana, but based in New York. I reached her to talk about her journey as an entrepreneur. Rahama, talk to me about your journey, how you started, and what was your inspiration?
Absolutely. Thank you, Jackson. I started Shaolin after serving in the Peace Corps. I was a volunteer in Mali, and I was assigned to a community health clinic. And while I was there, I would notice that oftentimes women would come to the health clinic and they would leave unable to buy medicine. And so I started wondering, how do women in my community make money? Why are they struggling with such extreme levels of poverty? And from that, I started researching income-generating activities for women and discovered shea butter and its connection to the lives of women in the Sahel region of Africa. And so I'm originally from Ghana. Half my family is from northern Ghana, where there are tons of shea trees. But it wasn't until I actually lived in a rural setting, because I grew up outside of Syracuse in upstate New York, but living in a rural setting in West Africa, in Mali, is when I started learning about the connection between shea butter and the lives of women in the Sahel region. So as I started seeing the disconnect between women and the marketplace, that's when I started thinking about creating an organization that would help connect shea butter producers directly to the marketplace in a way that helped them to create high-quality products and distribute those products in a way that would allow them to generate living wages and in a more sustainable manner, so that they could do things like send their kids to school, buy food, buy medicine, simply by creating a stronger link between producers and consumers.
Okay. And how has the experience been for you? If a young person wanted to get to be an entrepreneur, what type of advice would you give them?
Well, I call myself the 10-year overnight success. And I just, because it doesn't happen overnight. It's taken me a very long time to get to the point where I am today, where Shaolin is actually distributing products through Whole Food Markets and independent channels along the East Coast. And honestly, one of the first things is to have a passion for what you're doing, because if it doesn't happen overnight, you need staying power, you need to be encouraged, you need to believe in what you're doing in order to be able to stick with it. And so I think first and foremost, you really have to have passion for what it is that you're doing, your idea, your vision, what you believe. And then secondly, you have to understand the market. There are some key business concepts that any entrepreneur, you might not know it from the beginning, but you'll definitely have to learn as you go along. And for me, I started Shaolin in my early 20s. I had absolutely no business background. I had never taken a business class in my entire life. There are a lot of concepts that I didn't understand.
So you learn many of the things along the way.
Exactly. For me, in my experience, absolutely. I think it's, and I hope that encourages people that you don't have to have everything all together all at the same time. But the key thing is to really have passion for what it is that you believe in. And then, of course, being able to understand the market that you're entering into.
Professor Tom Odhiambo is a lecturer at Nairobi University. He says that young people need more challenging educational activities, experiences that will enable them to develop insight needed to discover and create entrepreneur activities.
If we argue that we are talking about socialization, acculturation, and pursuing knowledge that leads to progress of mankind, then you have to be able to build these knowledge blocks. And how do you build knowledge blocks? Knowledge blocks are built by actually having a curriculum that is adaptable to the social reality of the society, a curriculum that can be changed or that changes.
You mean that because, is dynamic?
Yes, because dynamic, because human beings change every morning,
right.
Every single day. If you just think about what IT has done, if you bought a gadget, an electronic gadget today, tomorrow you get shocked that one was invented in the evening. So you're going to have a curriculum that changes with the society, but still keeps the building blocks of knowledge.
So is our problem that on the continent that we don't have an evolving curriculum that reflects the changing society, or that we don't have the people who would impart the knowledge in this curriculum?
Largely, there's enough research and evidence that actually the big issue, the big problem is just qualified personnel. We don't have people who are competently trained and who are committed to the idea of teaching and who have the skills to research and the vision to sustain a university. And it consequently follows that then you didn't have a curriculum. Because curricula are developed.
Right.
They're developed by people. And to develop curricula, you need people to think. You need thinkers. In fact, universities, and a few years ago, universities used to largely employ people who would think. Today, universities employ largely people who do. So a lot of classes are Googled. So you travel around Africa, and universities are bad examples of models borrowed from Australia, from America, from the British, but nobody thinks about the adaptability of what needs to be done to local conditions.
And how does this reflect in the local marketplace, but also the global marketplace for the graduates of these institutions?
I mean, the thing is that exactly the part of the biggest discourse in Kenya, for example, and I've seen this in other parts of Africa. I've been to Tanzania, I've been to Zimbabwe, like I told you, I studied and worked in South Africa. You have a common refrain that African universities or Kenyan universities, let me give you an example, produce graduates who don't fit into the market. But what's the market? Exactly. Who is asking? Is the market a local market? But if you consider that the market is largely conditioned by global realities, most of these graduates will be local employees. It starts to fit. It tells you that the globalized economy demands certain sets of skills. And this may be argued to be universal, that you need a financial expert who can work in Nairobi as well as work in New York. That's not very true, okay? So what you do, then you have something called market-driven courses. Universities cannot be guided by the market on what they do. No institution of knowledge production can be guided by the market. Rather, there should be a conversation between the market and the universities. So you have local universities, for example, quite obsessed with business courses, quite obsessed with the so-called technological courses, when our technological innovation is many, many years behind technological innovation in Asia and America and Europe. So this is part of the crisis of we do not, many African countries, I think ministries of education, do not sit down to figure out what is the type of curriculum we are looking for. Yaga.
And speaking of future jobs, Adebayo Agbembo, a Global Future Lab participant, is the founder and lead programmer at Genie Games, a startup company in Nigeria. Adebayo says that he wants to teach and preserve indigenous African cultures among children using technology.
Genie Games is the parent entity behind the Asha brand. Asha means culture in Yoruba, and it's a range of interactive mobile applications and web videos that are geared towards promoting and preserving our indigenous African cultures, primarily among kids. So it started out in February of 2012.
Okay.
As one application, and then in 2013, you know, we formally incorporated the company, which is Genie Games. So it became a business then.
You started out with one app. How many apps do you have right now?
Presently, we have about a dozen applications that touch on different aspects, languages, and folk fields.
And who is your target market?
So our target are actually primarily African kids here in Africa and the diaspora. And then secondary for anyone who is keen to find out about, you know, different areas of African culture.
Can you imagine, such a big continent, very diverse, with hundreds of cultures. How many have you been able to capture so far?
So far we started out with Nigeria and touched on three major cultures. Yoruba, Hausa, Igbo. We've also touched on some other cultures like Efik, using our folk tales, for example, to help people understand a bit about their dressing and things like that.
And these apps are based on what type of platforms?
Okay, so presently we have them available for iOS, which are iPhones and iPads, and also Android devices.
But how many young kids between the ages of 2 and 12 in Nigeria or in Africa have access to those type of devices that would be able to, where they would be able to access these apps?
Okay, so what we've said, again, the way that we're going about this is actually targeting the parents, because the parents have access to these devices. And with what we've seen so far, you know, the bulk of our users are actually in the diaspora, and those ones have disposable income and have access to these devices. So with regards to the African market, you know, we're looking at, you know, taking the whole thing, making them available on the web to reach them, which is why we went into videos, you know, beyond starting up with the application. So I would say in terms of, you know, the mobile app versions, they're primarily targeted at those in the diaspora.
The ones in the diaspora would be the ones more in need of learning these cultures, right?
Yes, that's what we've seen so far in 3 years of doing this. We've seen that it's more of a pain to Africans in diaspora, because they are the ones most connected from the root cultures, and they are the ones who are even willing to pay for to have access to these things.
Now, it seems to me that you're at a cusp of a new thing here, a new industry, the gaming industry on the African continent. How is that growing?
It's on two sides. On the part of the developers, it's actually growing. We have a number of them besides myself who are building applications around games. And in terms of the users, I think the beautiful thing is it's turning out to be, you know, the one thing that we can use to drive other content, because it appeals to everyone. I mean, people want to be entertained, people want to relax. So, I mean, there's a growing appeal from, you know, from the youth, and also from the part of the developers, it's also catching up.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Samin, Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is at Upfront Africa. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.